Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a weekly podcast to keep you up to date on what's new on our cloud platform Microsoft Azure. Your hosts, Cynthia Krang, Evan Basilik, Sujit DeMello, Kendall Roden, Kale Teeter, and Russell Young, discuss a different service or solution on each show, with subject matter experts to explain how to get started, how different services work and how to make decisions in tricky scenarios. You can find out more about our podcast at azpodcast.com or follow us on LinkedIn.
And welcome back to the Azure Podcast. I'm your host, Evan Basilik. Today is July 17th, and we are recording big episode number 500. Congrats to the team. It's sort of shocking that we got here. It's been a fun ride for sure. I'm joined by my fellow co-hosts, Sujit and Kale. And today we're going to be talking about Database Watcher. Actually sort of back to my roots, my old days of SQL EE. We're joined by our special guest, Daniel Taylor and Bradley Ball. They're going to be talking about Database Watcher and, you know, sort of their experience using it. But before we do that, let's go ahead and get to the news. Sujit, I think you got a couple of things.
Yeah, just a light week this week. I think everyone's on vacation, I suppose, early July. So the three there, the first one is related to the original cloud services that we had in Azure, like in the very first
Day's coming. PaaS service. It's coming fast.
So the day is coming fast. December is the day, December 2024, when the Windows Server 2008 R2 family of those cloud services and the Windows Server 2012 family will be retired. So, and this includes even if you want extended support. So you have to be off that soon if you're not already off it. So that's first set of announcement. The other one is related to the backup vaults that we have in Azure. And so this is where you store your, you know, Azure backup would store all of your, your backups. In traditionally, Microsoft would use their own key to encrypt those backups, like a platform managed key. Now they've allowed you to have customer managed keys as well, right? So Microsoft will use a symmetric key for the data encryption, but that key is further encrypted with the customer's key, which is known as the key encryption key or the KIC, which is in use to encrypt the data encryption key. And that is stored in a key vault and never leaves it because it uses the encryption decryption feature of the key vault itself, you know, in the HSM to decrypt those keys. So that feature is now generally available. And the last one is related to Azure Elastic SAN. They've had a few updates over there. Typically, when you allocate space on the SAN, you might allocate a lot of space because they're not showing what you need. And then when you run it, you realize, oh, I didn't really need all that space. Now you can shrink the amount of space. So, you know, you can scale it down almost. If you say, okay, allocated 5 terabytes, we only need 3. You can reduce that. The volumes themselves cannot be reduced, but the new space on the SAN can be reduced if you don't need it. So that's another feature that's generally available.
And I'm going to add one more because I actually thought this is where you were going with the OS retirements. But just a reminder to everybody, I know we've talked about it on the show before, but August 31st for any classic resources that you have, that date is fast approaching. If you don't have a plan, go get one. that date is coming very, very fast. Please keep that abreast. We'll drop a link to that as well. Okay, great. Awesome. With that, Daniel, Bradley, if you could, go ahead, tell us who you are, what you do, here at Microsoft, and then let's talk about Database Watcher.
Absolutely. So thank you so much for having us. My name is Bradley Ball. I'm a senior Azure Fast Track engineer. We help onboard customers into Azure. We also work very closely with the product groups, getting feedback, being PG buddy as on preview and private preview services, and helping to be able to develop content that finds its way into Learn documents, but also videos with folks with the Azure SQL team and also with the Fabric team. So we work very closely with all of them.
Yeah, so my name's Daniel Taylor, DBA Bulldog out there on Twitter, if you want to find me out there, or on LinkedIn. Work on the same team with Brad there as well, so I won't reiterate what he said there, but I work in the data AI space, mainly working with the PaaS services, some Fabric, and working with these previews as well behind the scenes so that our customers have a good experience when they move into Azure.
Dan, that was great. A really nice job pushing your social media. I did not even think to do that. That was really nice. Uh-huh.
Look, it's all about branding, and you know, I totally lost my thought there, but that's all good. That's why you do live shows, right, y'all? But no, it's awesome.
And we immediately know how to fluster Dan. Give him a compliment.
Yeah.
Well, for those of folks who are listening on the audio stream, Dan's actually got a nice hockey shirt behind him, which has the word DBA Bulldog on it. So that's amazing.
It does. You should. Some people are confused by it at events. Other people are like, hey, I kind of know you. And by the way, I remember what I wanted to say. And thank you so much for having me on the show. I'm kind of a fan behind the scenes. I don't know if y'all know that. I'm a subscriber to your channel. So I'm really excited to be here. And when we got the invite, I was like, woo!
Happy to have you. Yeah. No, that's funny. And for those of you who, you know, for our global audience and some of our audience from different parts of the country, hockey is this really weird game that, you know, we slap around this really tiny rubber, you know, thing that around the thing, and it's played on ice. So for those of you, I grew up watching it, so I miss it, but I've sort of gotten out of it these days.
It's such a fantastic and fun game to be able to watch, especially to go see it live. But also, if you think about it, every game is kind of weird that we play.
Absolutely.
I often sometimes like to go, if there's aliens out there, they're sitting there watching us and they're like, oh, look, they've got sticks and they've got little things. Look at how they're hitting that one.
Absolutely.
Pickleball. Enough said.
That's not gonna, you know, I'm not gonna touch that one. That's the third rail. I'm not going there. So let's get into Database Watcher, right? So you know, as I was mentioning, I came from the SQL world originally when I was in support. You know, the DBA part of that job is very difficult in a lot of ways, right? You got to understand the application, you got to understand the history. Lots and lots of, you know, high severity cases come in where it's just tune your queries, whatever. Like, what is, like, Database Watcher sounds like it's going to help with that class of problem. You know, let's start out, like, what is it? What is it going to help me with?
Well, the first thing that I would say about Database Watcher, which is absolutely amazing, is whenever we think about third-party monitoring products and whenever we think about how we monitor our database systems, typically, if you're really lucky, you've got an MVP on staff. Well, this is actually being built by the product group that helps build SQL Server. And so the knowledge, the fundamental knowledge underneath the covers of SQL Server is there. We're pulling in all the DMVs that you could possibly want to be able to report off of. We're doing this in an asynchronous way, so we're not causing overhead on the database. We're storing it in a low latency storage. We're using Cousteau, which goes by several names, right? Azure Data Explorer, the Event House in Microsoft Fabric. But one of those tools that I think we all agree is one of the best kept secrets in Microsoft, in that it is so diverse and so flexible, and we run Microsoft off of it. And so the low latency, real-time capability to get analytics out of there and get that from your database systems is key. But when you drill into it, and there's the capability to start out high and then begin to drill underneath the covers where you've got DMVs exposed, you've got your wait stats exposed, you've got missing index stats, you've got index recommendations and tuning. You can even go and see a couple things like you would typically see on the old SSMS tools on-prem, where you can see active user queries and you can sort things, you can see block processes. And there's so much that you can dive into. And this is just sitting in public preview. So we're just starting to scratch the surface of what we can do. There's a lot of things that are going to be in place before we get out of public preview and we get into GA. But also there's some expanded functionality that we're going to be able to. So if you can think about the SQL Server engine and items you would want to have to be able to capture, to be able to do that performance troubleshooting or understand what's going on with your database workloads, there's a good chance you're going to see that integrated.
Yeah, I just realized I'm wearing my SQL Server 2005 shirt here. Just totally coincidental.
Automatic streak.
Yeah, but you know, I was reminded of another tool called, I think it's called PG Admin, that I've used with PostgreSQL, and it seems to have similar features. I just want to see, is that kind of audience sort of information that we want to raise up to our customers for SQL in this case?
I think it's very similar in that regard. I think it's very similar in the types of administrative items that you're taking. The really wonderful thing about this, and this is where the flexibility gets into it, is when you look at any of the charts that come with Database Watcher, there's three little dots in the upper right-hand corner. When you click on those, you can get the KQL that developed that graph. On top of that, if you're using Fabric in an event house, Fabric KQL databases accept T-SQL statements. So if you have a favorite community script, you're going to have to change it to be able to work with the names of the DMV data that we, the way that it's logged within the event house. But you could develop dashboards and you could develop graphics. And we've got real-time intelligence out there. And one of the things that we've just announced is the capability to make real-time intelligence dashboards and be able to have visualizations associated with them. So you could take those community scripts, you could pull that information. So if there's something that you as a DBA finds it really helps in your environment. There's a script that you've got. There's a toolbox that you've got. You could actually operationalize that. And there's also some things, because we're on Azure SQL MI, we're on Azure SQL Database, that get surfaced with regards to backups, when backups have occurred, that really helps with different compliance that hasn't really been something that any other tool has surfaced for customers.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, it's definitely a huge need. And for, you know, for our audience, DMV is dynamic management views. This is something actually, thank you, Sajid, for wearing the shirt today, that was introduced in SQL 2005, if my memory is right. KQL is that's the query language that Azure Data Explorer uses. And I think the last one that was referenced in there was SQL MI, which is SQL managed instances. This is sort of it's sort of halfway between the, you know, Azure SQL Database and you know, full SQL Server. It's a little bit of a blend of both. Where does
Real quick, Evan,
go ahead, Dan.
If I could just jump in there real quick, because I want to build on Sujit's question real quick here. I love that you asked the PG admin question, because Brad brought up something in the beginning that this is in preview. One of the things the product group is looking for is feedback, and one of the things they have on their roadmap is to monitor the OSS databases. So if your listeners are out there going, they want to expand it. They want to expand it to those databases so we can still have that single pane of glass. So if your listeners, when they're chiming in the comments, can provide that feedback, right? We can get that back to the PG group because we have a direct relationship with them, right? So I love that you asked that question because they're looking to build this as a single pane of glass for all of our services in Azure.
Well, that might actually answer my question, which was, you know, a number of years ago, we rolled out some features within Azure SQL DB, and I think it might be across some of the other SQL database platforms, you know, where we have the some mix of the engine and the service that we wrap around it is, you know, highlighting missing indexes. It can manage your indexes for you. It can do automated statistics management. You know, is that being replaced by Database Watcher, or is Database Watcher more about sort of, that stuff is still happening, but this is giving you all the other visibility? Like, how do those two play together?
No, that's a really great question. And it's not replacing it. And I think that's really key to understand for that functionality that's in Azure SQL Database, that's been surfaced to be able to allow for, to help with index tuning and index recommendation. Not replacing any of that. However, one of the things, if you've ever played around with SQL Server, if you played around with the dynamic management views, one of the things you'll find is there are a ton of community scripts out there. I remember the first time I ever wrote a query to be able to get a DMV back, and I looked at this information and I went, it looks like it's in English, but I have no idea what's sitting in front of me. And a great thing that a lot of MVPs have done over the years and bloggers in the community is take the DMV scripts and rewrite them to be able to help you understand what are the actionable items? What do I need to be able to dive into and jump into? And so part of the indexing information that we're gathering, you can go down to a statement level and you can really dive deep and get very, very granular with this tool. But it gives you that full capability to be able to see how everything's impacting it. Also to be able to see those index recommendations. One of the best scripts I think that was ever out there from a community perspective, there's an MVP a while ago named Jason Strait. Jason's a great guy, wrote several books on indexing, and he had an SP index analysis that's still out on GitHub. And when you run it, one of the things it does is it says, here's all the pros and cons that you've got to your indexes. Well, any script like that is literally just pulling that information from DMVs that are already built within SQL Server. So it's completely possible for us to be able to take some of that information, parse it, bubble it up. It's not meant for it to deploy the index changes, but it's meant to give the DBA or the administrator the knowledge to be able to say, here's what I should actually apply to my database.
Yeah. Makes sense. Makes sense.
Yeah, and following on with that, maybe you could expand, and this is maybe a basic question, but like somebody who's looking at this and saying, how should I use Database Watcher? You guys have been mentioning things like missing indexes and things like that that potentially could come up. But should I think about this tool as something like, hey, I turned this on, and if I have an e-commerce website or something like that that's using this database, all of a sudden the site slows down and they think it's a database problem. Is this a tool to say real time I can come in and start looking at stuff? Or is it more like, no, this is like for your meetings afterwards to say, how can we optimize? Oh, we missed some indexes here, or we did this thing, you know, that kind of stuff. So how should people think about that, you know?
So we get a best of both worlds approach there to answer your question. The question is why should I use this? Do I get real-time analytics, right? Do I get real-time intelligence, real-time monitoring? And do I have historical that I can go back and look at, right? We get both. So that's the beauty of the dashboard. You'll drill into your dashboard and you'll see your, if you can picture this on your screen, you're going to see your Azure SQL DBs, you're going to see your Elastic pools, and you're going to see your SQL managed instances. Right now, those are the three things you see on your screen. When you drill into that, your first thing you're going to see is going to see your CPU usage, your IOs, your memory usage. Then you can drill in. And as you further drill in there, you're going to have a grid chart or a bar chart. You're going to drill in. And that's going to give you those real-time statistics from query performance to build on what you were saying, Evan, in missing indexes. So you're going to be able to drill into that. But let's say we're all hiking, right? I love the mountains. I want to get out in America, right? I love hiking in the Smoky Mountains. I also love playing video games on the weekend. Let's say we're off on the weekend, right? And we come in on Monday and the clients are like, my gosh, our performance was horrible. And that happens a ton of times. That happens all the time. I remember back in the day not having these tools, getting those questions and going, I can't answer your question for that. But with the Database Watcher, monitoring our Azure SQL DBs, our hyperscales, our managed instances, you can go back historically over the weekend and drill into 15-minute segments and find your blocking, your CPU intensive, and those queries that were going bad. So it's a best of both worlds, really.
And to add on that, there's some functionality that we're surfacing through this tool that's never been surfaced before. One of the great things that we have in SQL Server is called Query Performance Insights, QPI. And we have the query store database where all of your metrics are stored for your main database. Well, this is actually abstracting it from all of those different databases. So if you wanted to do cross database query store comparisons, you could. And why might you want to do that? Well, let's say that you've got readable secondaries and you're offloading some of your traffic to it, but sometimes some of that traffic is coming to your primary database, which is your read-write database. You could actually look at the query performance insights and correlate that between those two databases because that's extracted, that's sitting in a table, and you could just use where predicate values to be able to separate that and look at that information. So there, it's still your data. We're giving it to the customer, unlike in the past where sometimes it's in a hidden storage container or it's somewhere where you wouldn't have access to it. Part of the reason we're saying, hey, let's put it in a Azure Data Explorer database or an Event House database in Fabric is so the customer can say, hey, how long do I want to retain this? How much data do I want to have in here? But also allow me the freedom to go in and query my data whenever I want it and be able to get it. They can, of course, use the graphical tools that we've got in place. But a lot of this is about giving DBAs, database administrators, anybody who's doing that performance turning workload job, data engineers, that democratized vote to be able to go in and get their data and be able to figure out what's going on.
So this sounds really exciting, but I'm just wondering, like, you know, if I have a SQL database and I do have a few that I have out there in Azure, how do I even, like, you know, install this, get started, point to my database? What are some of the prerequisites? Are there networking requirements? I guess I have a lot of questions about that. You know, what should be in place? What needs to be in place to use the tool? And, you know, can it be used from outside from the internet? Does it have to be on a VNet? I guess, you know, maybe some questions like that.
So great question. The prerequisite is you got to have Azure, right? And right now we monitor we monitor Azure SQL DB, Hyperscale, and SQL Managed Instance right now. Those are the three prerequisites. It's a serverless environment that you're installing. So you're going to go out and you're going to say, type in your little search at the top of the screen, and you're going to say, I want to do Database Watcher. And Database Watcher is going to pull up.
You'd probably just say Database Watcher.
Yeah. Don't say that I want to. That's my brain thinking out loud there, you folks. But you're going to type in Database Watcher. You're going to get the screen. You're going to install a Database Watcher. There is absolutely, folks, absolutely no cost for that. When you install a Database Watcher, that's the first prereq, right? When you get that installed, you can do your SQL connectors and all that, but we'll talk about that here in a second. So you get the Database Watcher. Then when you start talking about our SQL connectors, which are our Azure SQL DBs, our Hyperscale, and our Managed Instance and Elastic Pools, you're going to set those up through an endpoint. And when you send those endpoints up, you have two ways to do it. You can go over the open internet, which some people still do, or this is the best thing, you can use private endpoints. And you will set up the private endpoint from your Database Watcher to your Azure SQL DB and so on and so forth. So there are no VNets or that right now that you need to be concerned about. I hope as the product grows, it grows into other services, which we'll talk about maybe during this call. But once you have those connectors, you also have the ability to join to two different data stores, or actually multiple data stores. And this is what I always recommend. When you're setting up Database Watcher, folks, and you're trying to show management your return on investment, use the free KQL cluster to start. That means for your POC, there is going to be absolutely no cost. Then when you do decide, I recommend moving it to Fabric, just because there's a lot more, the event house in Fabric, there's a lot more functionality we can get there. We can integrate it within our environment. And then on top of that, once you get that done, if you're using SQL logins, this is the beauty of the security aspect of it. If you're using SQL logins, you have to put those into the Key Vault, and then it extracts those through the Key Vault over an encrypted connection, especially since you're going to be using private endpoints. And that's something also I recommend to folks is if you don't use a Key Vault private endpoint, you have to open up your Key Vault to the public. And that's a no-no, folks. You want to keep that over a private connection. So there aren't a lot of prerequisites, right? You need to have the Database Watcher. You need to have your PaaS services, your Azure SQL DB PaaS services, set up those private endpoints in your data store. Outside of that, it's pretty easy peasy to set up and get going.
Yeah, and I was wondering about the KQL store, right? The data. So that would be. I know you said you do the free one, but typically they're going to use a Fabric or something like that. So there will be an additional cost. Just to be transparent, there'll be an additional cost for hosting that, right?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
And the space would be, you know, depending how many months or weeks of data you want to keep, that's going to determine how much space you use there.
Absolutely. When you configure that database, you've got those configuration policies. The nice thing is it's in the GUI. You don't have to use code for that, or you could deploy code if it's part of your CI/CD process. But you have the capability to set up what is the retention date going to be, and how long would you like to be able to store that data?
Yeah, and what? A recommendation sorry, Evan, I didn't mean to cut you off there. But one recommendation when you set that up, I typically recommend folks start with 30 days and then 7 days hot cache. And if the hot cache is costing you a little too much and you can wait to pull that data from the cold cache, reduce your hot cache, and that can save you some money on your KQL databases. So just a little side tip there that I find customers are missing when they install this.
When I was in SQL Server, we had this, you know, really super helpful collection tool called PSS.diag. And then we would have all these scripts and everything that we run internally to generate this perspective. And that, you know, there was certainly a lot of, you know, sort of understanding of SQL perf within that team. But a big chunk of our knowledge was all sort of stuffed into that tooling so that anybody could go run that analysis. We actually released it to the public at one point. I can't remember the name that we called it. But it sounds like, you know, is that the kind of intelligence that we're pulling into Database Watcher so that, you know, we sort of have that? And then the sort of the related question is, okay, let's say I need help from support. Can I give them my Database Watcher data? Like, do they have visibility to that, right? That way I'm not having to run these scripts and then send them stuff. And again, if maybe that's a future thing, that's fine. But like, are we leveraging sort of that institutional knowledge of what to do around building this? And then how do we share that, you know, sort of the state of my database with people that might need it?
So what I really love about what you said, I think there's a lot of future capabilities associated with this. Like the PSS Diag tool, I know I've used that. Dan, you were nodding your head, you've used that. Many of us have used that tool before.
Yeah.
And the fantastic SQL thing Diag,
that's what we used to call it when we were this to the public. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Just came to me.
When you would pull in all that information and then you run it, the great thing is it would produce reports and say, here's where your hotspot is.
Right.
That is part of what these reports currently do.
Great.
Which is absolutely wonderful. But there's probably the capability to, again, because this is so open, because if you don't want to learn how to write KQL queries, if you're doing this in Fabric, you could just write T-SQL queries against the Event House database. There's a lot of capabilities we believe to be able to expand what the functionality of this is going to be in the future. It's just, it's so new. It's one of those things where, you know, sometimes it takes a little bit of time for people to get their eyes on it. But I feel like as that happens, you're going to find people build processes and tools around this because the data collection is so easy and it is so robust for us to be able to get it.
Makes sense.
And
yeah, it makes total sense.
I do see this being a support, a benefit for when folks open support cases, right? Not that support's going to dig in to their data for them. But with PSS Diag, right, we would ask many times for them to run that. We run it through Kendall Van Dyke's Power BI report. I can't remember what that was called, but it was a nice visual, right? Yeah. I mean, I loved using those tools. And we could provide them the support. Well, now when a client says, look, my Azure SQL DB ran really poor this weekend, and they open up a case, it not only gives the CSS folks the ability to quickly dive in, but they can open up an additional support ticket to get like a CSA involved or a CE involved that can come in and help them. So it's definitely something. I think it's PSS Diag was great. I think this is PSS Diag on steroids because we get our constant, we get our historical, we get our real time. So I'm reminiscing about PSS Diag.
It always used to suck of like, oh, you weren't running PSS Diag when your problem happened again. I can help you when it happens again.
Yes.
But I can't help you till then. Right. Like I always hated delivering that message. And this is great. This always on is such a huge requirement, QPS, all that kind of stuff, really the query something, I forget the PS stands for, but the query store stuff is so critical, right? And this really allows us to see that history because you don't want to miss it. You don't want to have to wait for it to happen again. That's the worst possible situation. Absolutely. Okay, so great.
The best testimonial I can give for this when we talk about customer troubleshooting is Dan was working with a customer, and I'm going to brag on you here for a second, Dan. I didn't know if you were going to pull this out, but I wanted to make sure it was said. Dan was working with a customer. He told them about this. They were having a performance issue. They turned it on, and they found and corrected and fixed their performance issue. Yeah, exactly.
That was it. I was like, done.
Yeah. Look, if you can do my job for me, I am happy to take more vacation.
Yeah, and look, we have enough. We know Microsoft has a lot of clients, right? And we just can't get to them all. This allows us to touch and get, that could be sounded really improved. This allows us to scale ourselves out with more and more folks. So no, it's I think there's a huge win to it. It's one of the most exciting things that I think we've released for databases in a long time. I was really excited when this came out, so.
Yeah.
And just one point of clarification from a connectivity perspective, is this talking to the Kustov database primarily, or is it doing both is doing the live stats from SQL Server and the Kustov database for historical data?
Pulling information via serverless agent. So there was an initial product that never made it past private preview. If we just want a little bit of fun history, right? And it was called SQL Insights. It was a really great product. PG put that together, and it was based off of open source initially. And you went out and you provisioned a Linux agent, or a Linux VM that the agent process would run on, and it would be pulling the SQL DMVs and it dropped data into log analytics. This is essentially the updated version of that, because while that was great and it was really awesome, had a lot of scale capabilities to it. As a matter of fact, we had one customer, I don't want to say their name, but we literally had thousands of SQL Server databases that we were running against that just to be able to make sure we could handle the scale and the volume. Right now, I think it's 100 databases per database watcher based off the SKU unit you have. And the capability is going to be there for that to be able to scale. If you're looking at a managed instance, it'd be one managed instance would count as one of those instances. If you're looking at an Azure SQL database, that would be one database for one. So when you look at that 100 counting, Azure SQL MI kind of gets a pass because it's all within that one server and compute type of instance. But there's a lot of skill, there's a lot of capabilities to be able to do this. And I love that we're able to be able to just get those actionable insights so quickly. It, when people have them and they can look at them and they can use them and you see them, apply them in your production environments. As a matter of fact, they did it so quickly. Dan was a little nervous when they came around and they got that running.
Yeah. And it, so our serverless engine talks to the Kusto database behind the scenes, right? The monitor through the serverless engine, the monitoring tool is what's consuming that data. And why I love that architecture is because we could have all of our SQL databases managed instances down and we could still get those stats. We could still query those. Easy. So they're kind of separated. So so just to build on what Brad was saying there.
And I like that you're not putting additional load on the database itself, right? Yeah. So that's always, customers always worried. It's already running at 95%. I don't need to add anything more to it.
And for transparency, it will put a little bit of load because it is querying those DMVs, right? The dynamic management views. Some of them, but with SQL Insight, which Brad mentioned, that was like 15 minutes wait time. We're getting stuff within seconds here, folks, sometimes milliseconds. So it's super fast with what we are retrieving, giving us that real-time insight into our data.
Yeah, one last question I had, and this goes on to something you said, Brad, about like, you know, some of the previous generation tools and things that were used here is it was a little bit like Egyptian hieroglyphics, what came back there, and you had to be like some guru to even understand what's going on there. I'm curious, like, does this help in that respect, right? It's a conduit to get this performance data and things like that primarily that you're getting there, but does it help on that side, or it's like, well, you still need to be kind of a DBA to understand what's going on here kind of thing?
There are places where, at a very high level, we're saying, look, this is red, look into it. You know, this is green, this is red, this is yellow. But there are places when you start drilling down into it, if you want to get really, really granular, you need to have some fundamental understanding to be able to dive down that deep. But it will help you to be able to find those items. And it really helps if you look at old methodologies, right? Like the weights and queues methodology, everything you could ask for is sitting right there in front of you. So if you have some semblance of understanding, or if you got a junior DBA, they're probably going to need, you know, a mid to a senior sitting with them, helping them understand those things. That would happen with any situation.
You're lowering the bar at the end of the day, right? You are lowering it from where you were. So there's no question it's going to help. Well, yeah.
And to tie into one of your previous videos that y'all did here on the channel, you know, we're afraid about some things taking our job. No, we're not afraid. We know it's going to help us. Copilot, right? Copilot's running out into everything. And let's just pretend that there's a Copilot sitting on top of your event house in Fabric. You can have those juniors using natural query language to bridge that gap, right? Yeah, they still need to know the proper questions to ask, but they will still need some DBA skills. But I think to Evan's point, we're making that bar to entry lower, and that helps us scale out again, right? That really helps us do our job better, allowing us to get on to other things and help other customers or help the database perform and do what it needs to do.
A lot to admire in what Dan has said there. I mean, the call out to Copilot, the original social media you know, call outs as well. Really, really nice work there, Dan. I love the work in that integration Copilot. But you're right. We have that already. And one of the things is, as long as you know how to ask the question, you don't even have to ever type a line of KQL. You could just click a button and there's your query result.
Huge. This is really ironic because I remember, and you know, Bob Ward's been on the show a couple of times talking about Linux and SQL Server. I remember, I was a junior engineer, so it's probably been 10, 15 years now, minimum. I remember Bob spending several years on this effort to get these agents installed, and it was somehow sending data in, and like the lift to get that there in that day was tremendous. You know, now with the cloud capabilities and the AI, like it's again, same general construct, but it's just such a more, you know, robust, buildable product these days. And we can invest the effort in the intelligence, it sounds like, rather than the infrastructure, right?
Bob Ward is
a much better place.
I was going to say, Bob Ward is such an amazing man, too. And he is so smart, so knowledgeable, so humble about the knowledge that he possesses as well. But I feel like deep down inside, that part of the goal, every time I see him and Anna Hoffman together, she's building that Bob AI. And eventually we're just going to release it. And it's going to have Bob's face on it. Yeah, he's going to pop up almost like a nice SQL Clippy. And he's going to go, I see your database is in trouble. Would you like help with that? Texas Rangers are great.
Wait, we cannot let Bob hear this video. He's phenomenal to work with, but yeah, we can't let him know we think so highly of him. So this is great. I really appreciate the intro to Database Watcher, but I would be really not being a good citizen if I didn't, you know, sort of call out the fact that both of y'all have your own channel, and you are talking about, you know, give us a rundown of, you know, this channel you've got, what you're talking about there, you know, what the audience should be. Give us a rundown.
No, thank you. So we've got a channel we started back in 2022, Tales from the Field. And one of the things, because we work so closely with customers, we interface a lot with product groups. The goal was, how do we take this knowledge? We love to share knowledge. We love to teach. We love to help people. I'd stand on the street corner and do it for free. You know, thank God Microsoft pays me to do it. It makes my wife very happy.
He would do it.
But we look at how can we take this knowledge and how can we put it in a format to be able to help people, you know, take our tools and be able to accomplish more with it. And so in the last couple of years, we do a lot of different things. We do MS Tech Bits on Mondays and Wednesdays, where we drop a video that's between 5 minutes and it could be 25 minutes long, diving into a topic and saying how we do this. Dan actually has several wonderful videos on Database Watchers that'll really help people understand how to be able to set this up and how to be able to work through it. I do a lot of stuff on Microsoft Fabric. And so I've got some stuff on utilizing T-SQL and utilizing Copilot. And we are working with Thomas LaRocque to do a pre-con over at Live 360, where we're going to take all this and bring it together. We're going to do some performance troubleshooting in there, but we're going to take some performance troubleshooting scenarios, and we're going to go through the class, and we're going to say, this is how we set it up. This is how we configure it. Now let's actually run into problems, and let's use this to be able to solve our problems using that weights and queues methodology.
Awesome. Well, we'll be sure, you know, thrilled to have you all on. You know, we'll definitely include links to all the stuff that we referenced, as well as the news, and we'll include links to your shows as well. Because, you know, again, I think y'all are doing a great job, you know, sharing this information downstream. I sort of joke, you know, on a regular basis, because, you know, I come from support. Actually, I just moved back to support. You know, I joke that you're taking my jobs, but you're actually just making it more interesting, right? The boring questions are the one I've answered 1,000 times, right? The really new, hard, novel one, that's where the fun comes in, right? So no, y'all are doing great service. Really appreciate the work and the effort on that space.
Thank you.
No issue.
And if thank I you guys for up, what you're doing. Yeah. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah.
Man, sorry.
No, absolutely. Thank you. And I want to raise up SQL Saturdays. It looks like, Kale, either those are the best events, the SQL Saturday. I can't tell if those are conference badges, Kale, on the side, or if those are running badges, but they look like conference badges. So I'm going to bring up SQL Saturdays. We at Tales from the Field do a lot of presenting at SQL Saturdays. I'll be presenting hopefully at Orlando coming up in October. I'll be up in Boston presenting there. And those take a little effort for folks to get to. One I'm really excited about that Brad and I are also presenting at above and beyond, above on top of Live 360, is Future Data Driven Summit. It's a free online event for everybody. Great training, great events there. Definitely recommend people check those out. We're going to be talking about those, and we're going to be sharing some very unique things that you may want to come and see that aren't in the videos yet.
Nice job. I like that, Daniel. I like what you did. Okay, well, great. You know, y'all, thanks for coming back on. You know, we'll, you know, look to stay in touch with y'all and have you back on in the future as well, but really appreciate you coming on and talking about Database Watcher.
Thank you for having us, gentlemen.
Wonderful. Awesome. Thanks, folks. Bye now.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any thoughts, questions, or just want to connect, find us on LinkedIn. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. We hope you'll tune in again soon to keep learning with us.